Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're delighted that you've joined us. Come back after the break.
Absolutely. Remember, if you'd like to join in the show, you can go to Facebook / The Music Row Show, as it looks like an awful lot of you did here for the last hour. And you can also get us on the Twitters.
On the Twitters, also at The Music Row Show, Instagram at The Music Row Show. And you know what? Anything else they might come up with, we'll figure it out eventually. And
right.
It'll be at The Music Row Show. So there you go.
What is that? Tinder at The Music Row Show.
I don't think so.
Swipe left, swipe left. They're still there. Swipe left, swipe left.
Before we get into too much trouble, Scott, why don't you introduce our fine guest here this
evening? Absolutely. Frank, he was a founding member of the hit country vocal band Mason-Dixon, which was the Independent Vocal Group of the Year for Cashbox in 1987 with 9 number one singles on the independent music chart, and charted several top 40 singles and hit CMT videos back in the 80s and 90s. A few years back, after taking some time off of music, he strapped the guitar back on and has embraced the life of a Texas troubadour, winning songwriting and performance awards at several art and music festivals. His single, Silver Dollar, great, great song, from the CD with the same title, spent 4 weeks at number one on the Roots Americana chart. And we've seen him perform a few times, and I can honestly say that his voice is better than ever. It is such a pleasure to say Frank Martin Gilligan. We're glad you're here, and welcome to the Music Row Show.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. Woo! I sure do appreciate that.
Nice. Now, you're originally from New York City, not a whole lot of country going on there. What were you listening to at the time?
Well, you know, me growing up, I was a big Beatles fan, you know, and in high school, Jethro Tull and Zeppelin, mm-hmm. And on the other hand, I love John Denver, you know,
okay.
So it ran the gamut. But you know, I came down to Texas when I was 19. So yeah, I had a grounding in New York of all that music, but my dad was a loved country music. He didn't really know it. He called
it. So
it
was around.
It wasn't around in New York as you would think. There was one little place in Flushing, Queens that my dad would frequent called the Velvet Cup. It was a gin mill, as he would say, right?
Yes.
And he said, Frankie, you got to come with me. There's this guy singing tonight. And I walked in, and down at the end of the bar, just him and his guitar, was Dave Dudley.
Okay.
6 days on the road and I'm going to
make
it
home tonight.
And I didn't really know at the time. I was maybe 16, didn't know who Dave Dudley was, but I sure did find out later. And I said, man, that little bar in Queens, Dave Dudley was it. And so my dad loved country music.
All right.
Hillbilly music.
Hillbilly, yeah.
So I'm interested in the musical transition. So from New York, where you're listening to Zeppelin and Jethro Tull and, of course, the Beatles.
I was in the first band that I was ever in, a neighborhood band.
Mm-hmm.
We did, Sha Na Na was really big at the time.
Right. Oh, yeah.
So we did a Sha Na Na type act, and then we would turn around and do Zeppelin and Jethro Tull. It was a weird thing. But,
wow.
But with the hair slicked back and everything,
yeah,
and then
thing,
you'd be
the
doing the Led Zeppelin too.
Right.
Oh,
uh-huh.
Killer. So,
I'm just trying
kids,
to picture
you know,
that.
Yeah.
What's the big deal, right?
So you come to Texas, and how did that expand the musical horizons for you? I mean, because that's a whole different world on the radio,
sure.
Right?
It was 1975, and Texas was experiencing, Jeff Walker, you know, progressive country.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a whole big scene there, you know. It was almost like progressive country was being played on the rock stations, and you had Jerry Jeff Walker, and you had the Lost Gonzo Band, and Michael Martin Murphy was the Cosmic Cowboy, and
right.
it was a really great scene. Willie, really 75. That I think that's when Redhead and Stranger came.
It's right
out.
Around there.
Yeah.
And so I absorbed it.
Was it instant absorb? Were you like, oh man, listen to this, or was it did it take you a while to to embrace it.
Didn't take me any time at all to embrace it, because it's maybe it's when in Rome, do as the Romans do, but it was good music.
Yeah,
yeah.
And, you know, I certainly got behind it.
Nice. Sweet.
Well, what kind of culture shock did you experience coming from New York to Texas?
Well, when I first came to Beaumont, Texas at 19, you know, of course, I still talk like this, you know, so that was a big stumbling block. But, you know, you get over that. If you're going to play country music, you better learn how to talk a little bit like
y'all
this.
Y'all sounds know? Funny coming out
how
of that
y'all
accent.
Y'all tonight, you know. I could, the oppressive heat. And back then in Beaumont, you could really smell the refineries, you know, and they seem to have got a handle on that. Either that or I've become nose blind.
It might be nose blind.
could be both, you know. But, yeah.
You had no problem by our dairy farm, I'll just say. That.
Well, you know, that's right. the good thing about it was I had two of my brothers were in Beaumont, you know, so it wasn't such a huge culture shock. They walked me through a lot of things.
Some mentors.
Yeah, they introduced me to fried okra.
Okay.
Chicken fried steak. You know, things like that.
The important things.
All the fried right. everything.
Yes, the food groups. Lone Star Beer.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, describe the, just the, and you kind of touched on it here, but describe that fertile Texas music scene in the 70s and early 80s. I mean, and talk about this for Logan's sake here. Bands were playing nightly.
Sure.
Dance halls, crowd, people came to watch you play, and you actually got paid for playing, right?
Isn't that something?
That's crazy. So talk about that.
Well, you know, in the 70s, you know, as I said, I was 19, so we were really getting our feet wet. But, you know, we moved to Houston the summer of 75. This is Rick Henderson and myself. We billed ourselves as Mason Dixon. We were an acoustic duo for about almost 5 years. Mm-hmm. We did an acoustic, and we played restaurants and little bars, and you just kept working. Everybody worked. Mm-hmm. It was just a whole different climate as far as that's concerned. And into the 80s, when we formed a band, it was the same thing, you know. Just people were working 5-6 nights a week, and we'd go on the road and stay in band houses and in Amarillo, and then we'd go to Nacogdoches and we'd stay in another band house, and that's just the way it was for quite a while, really.
Well, with just two of you billing yourselves as Mason Dixon, you must have always had to answer the question, which one of you is Mason and which one of you is Dixon?
Of course, you know, and me being the Yankee, I guess I'd be the Mason and he would be the Dixon. And somewhere around 1979, we met Jerry Dengler and we became the trio that became known as Mason Dixon, the vocal trio. And we had band members. We had backup band members along the way, many of them pretty noted individuals these days.
Well, you had a drummer that was a dear friend of ours.
Dave McAfee.
Well, I was thinking Billy.
Oh, Billy Block was our first,
drummer
on the road. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Right. Yeah. He was a character. Well, Billy was from Houston.
Yep.
And it was maybe 3 or 4 months that he was with us, and we go out to play in San Angelo. And I remember playing with Billy the night that John Lennon died.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
It's funny how these things, you know, crystallize in your...
Yeah, yeah.
But he was a character.
Man. Well, describe... I mean, you've been talking about touring. I mean, Texas is so big. I mean, describe touring in Texas. I mean, you can pretty much make a living just in that one state.
Well, you can. I'm trying to prove that now, you know... making a living is a people's definition of it might be different, but I'm comfortable. I'm always worried about money, but you can make a living just going around it. Right now, it's just me and my guitar, and sometimes it's me and my guitar player and guitar, and you can do it. It's a lot harder than it was way back because. I think you guys know musicians are being paid the same as they were in the 80s, you know, so it's...
If they're lucky.
Yeah.
If they're getting paid at all. What do you think has contributed to that not changing over the years?
Well, I really haven't put my finger on why. But you know, you have to get people in the seats. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of people just aren't going out as much as they used to.
It's harder to get people to come out nowadays.
Right. Anywhere, because I blame the internet. Because you can entertain yourself and you can feel like you're going out by just logging on to the internet and maybe watching YouTube videos or even watching a live show.
From
someplace on the internet.
Right.
But, you know, that's something we're all going to have to deal with, isn't it?
Yeah.
Huh.
Interesting.
All right.
We got a couple minutes before we got to take a break. And this isn't on here, but yeah, as you mentioned, band houses. For any of you who have not played back in those days, band houses were the nastiest, nastiest things. You would pray for a cheap hotel rather than the band house. But do you have any?
But then you put musicians in it that made it even nastier.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you have any safe for radio funny stories about band houses that you might remember?
I remember Jerry Dengler had a young son who was still in diapers, mm-hmm. and he went out to run some errands. He and his wife were there, and I think they were staying someplace else, but left the kid with us.
Brilliant.
And guess what?
What did he find?
We had to change a diaper, and I don't think we knew how to operate those diapers. We wound up putting duct tape on the kid's diaper. it was quite a scene. Now Jeremy's about 37 years old now, you know. Thank God he's not listening. I'm sure he isn't, but he'd be embarrassed.
Yeah, he's probably still seeking therapy because of that experience.
Uh-huh. I think we need to back this up just a hair, because so you get to Texas, but how do you meet the other your partner? I mean, how did that even happen?
My brother, Jim, who is a baseball coach at Lamar University. Well, he just retired this last year. He introduced me to Rick Henderson.
Okay.
Almost immediately when I had gotten down there in January of 1975. And Rick and I hit it off and we started, you know, playing together. And we entered a talent contest at Lamar University that was hosted by Ted Mack.
Okay.
Now, maybe you guys don't remember Ted Mack and the Ted Mack Amateur Hour, but it was the precursor to maybe like the Ed Sullivan Show, you know.
Right.
Or
Star
really,
Search, you mean?
Really Star Search or America's Got Talent, you know. Okay. It was the first, maybe the second after Arthur Godfrey. But he was the actual host, and Rick and I came in second. I'm not going to tell you what song we sang.
Oh, what song did you sing?
No. All right, we did Redneck Mother.
Okay.
Ray Wiley Hubbard. It was a big song at the time, and, you know, we didn't know what we were doing, but it got laughs and whatever, and we came in second. But thankfully, there was a girl named Liz Fertitta who came in first, and she deserved it.
There you go.
She did a dance. It was great.
You gave her first.
Yes.
And then that's when they wrote the song. Yeah. That's when you wrote the song I'm Sweeter for Fertitta, right?
That's right.
I remember that song. Well, that was a big hit for you guys.
I know.
All right, let's take a break. We are going to be back in a few minutes.
Hey, you know what? Our sponsor this segment has been Toyota of Cool Springs.
And you know, you're right. And you need to buy a new car.
I do.
And when you do, the nice thing is when you go to Toyota of Cool Springs, just going and looking around, because there is that discovery period of any car shopping.
You gotta figure out what you want, yeah.
They're not jumping on you like buzzards, like tends to happen in some dealerships.
Right.
And by the same token, they're not ignoring you. If you need something,
they're right there for you.
They're right there for you. But it's just comfortable. And I know we say that a lot, but buying a car, getting your car worked on is rarely comfortable.
Yeah, it's not something people look forward to and
look
be like,
forward,
yay,
oh,
I get
I'm
to go
do
this.
This.
Right.
Yeah. So,
but at Toyota of Cool Springs, you actually can.
You feel comfortable. Yeah. So go see George, the owner. He's going to do a great job for you. And again, that's toyotaofcoolsprings.com.
Yeah, we're going to be back with a whole lot more of Frank Martin Gilligan here on the Music Row Show.
Was an old, worn, and faded 1890 silver dollar. When he handed it to me, he said, I hope you treat it well. But if it could talk about places that it's been to,
You would be amazed at all the stories it could tell.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with singer-songwriter Frank Martin Gilligan. Got to make sure to say all three names or I get in trouble.
This is his title track of his CD that's available now called Silver Dollar.
Silver Dollar.
Highly recommend you all pick that up. Where can people find it?
Well, on iTunes, and you can order it from my website, frankmartingilligan.com, and Amazon.
Okay.
And that's all I can think of right now.
All right. Well, if you come by the studio. CD Baby.
Yeah.
In the next 40 minutes or so, we can probably got a copy or two we can probably sell.
Yeah, come to the studio right
now. Yeah, right now.
You pay anything you want.
There you go.
As long as it's $50.
As long as it's $50. And we don't have change. Sorry, none of us have that in our pockets. What are you going to play us?
I'm going to play a new song that seems to be getting a lot of attention. Every time I play it, someone says, I want to cover that. I said, okay. I thought it was a blues song, Scott.
Yeah.
And I played it for my buddy Joe Gavito, and he said, this ain't a blues song, it's too many chords. I said, what? He said, you wrote a doo-wop song, you damn Yankee. So we argued back and forth, and finally we decided that it's a blue-op song.
There you go.
Blue-op, I love that.
So that when we put it out, it'll be number one on the blue-op chart.
Guaranteed.
All we got to do is make one.
Scott. You know what I'm saying?
You know what? That's brilliant.
So I'm going to play it for you now and see what y'all think. I gotta tell you, at first it hurt like hell, after a million tears, you can hardly even tell that I was broken. You had to see it for yourself. Did you come back just to finish what you started? Did you think that I should be just a bit more brokenhearted? You better go now while I still think I'm over you. Right from the moment I saw you walking through that door, I told my heart to settle down. Ain't going down that road no more, but it ain't easy when you're standing right here in front of me. What will it take to keep this feeling from returning? What can I do to stop this fire from burning? You better go now while I still think I'm over you. Hope you ain't talking second chances. Baby, you know that ship has sailed. You don't know what to do when it ain't up to you. How does it feel to know you failed? Did you come back just to finish what you started? Did you think that I should be just a bit more brokenhearted? You better go now while I still think I'm over you. Oh, oh, yeah. You better go now while I still think I'm over you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Woo! Wow. So
the very first blue wop song. Blue
Wop, number one on the blue wop charts.
Wow, I love that.
Boy, can you imagine 20 years from now saying, remember when blue wop came around?
It was on the Music Row Show.
Yeah.
So you get picked up by Capitol Records. Mason Dixon does.
I want to point out that we had like six albums on independent charts before that,
right?
You know, that was a lot of fun. I have to mention some of the guys that we worked with.
Please.
Well, Dan Mitchell, a great songwriter here in Nashville.
If you want to play in Texas, you got to have a fiddle in the band.
Yeah, he did, and Rodeo Romeo for Mo Bandy. He was our producer for like four albums, you know, and he really he taught us a lot. And then we got on with Capitol. We did a showcase, and they liked us, and they signed us.
So, okay, well, let's back it up then. Do you think the Nashville attention was from the indie success, or were you guys chasing Music City?
Well, it was a little bit of both. I mean, yeah, we had good success, and we were very important, I think. We were working our butts off in Texas. You know, we were playing all over the place, and we did get out. We went to California. We went up to the East Coast, you know, here and there. So we had a following, you know. And I think that was a deciding factor also.
Okay.
And I think we sounded pretty good, too.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can actually on YouTube, you can hear a lot of those singles, including, I believe this is one of the independents, your Police cover.
That was our very first chart record.
Yeah, Every Breath You Take.
Right. It was like a country shuffle version of it. And I bet you people are rolling their eyes or thinking, a country shuffle version of Every Breath You Take. Let me tell you, it was 1983, and it worked. It was the same year that the Police had the song out, and you know what? Country radio wasn't going to play their version, so
there you go.
You made your own. Yeah. That's awesome. I love that. Did you ever get any feedback from the boys in the Police?
I can't say that I personally did.
A cease and desist or anything like that?
Oh,
no.
Just kidding. We had permission. You know.
Good. Wow. So
we didn't have forgiveness, but we had permission.
Yeah.
So you get picked up by Capitol. You've got it made. You got a major label deal. What surprised you about the major label deal compared to the previous recordings that you've been doing independently?
Well, probably the budget.
Oh.
It seems like our budget was quite a bit more to create, you know, so we had Bud Logan produced our first album for Capitol, The Exception to the Rule. And, you know, we got all the great players, Larry London, Michael Rhodes, Steve Nathan, Brent Rowan. There's a lot of guys I their names are flying out of my head right now, but, you know, it was quite a great experience. And then, you know, the machine, the public relations machine was probably a little bit better, because when you're on indies, you have to take care of all of that yourself.
Okay.
Like we do today.
Exactly.
Right. So here we are back to, we've come full circle. Yeah.
And, so how different was since you had done quite a few albums before that, how different did that extra budget make the recording process? I mean, how did you go about it differently?
You know, I'm not saying that it was, you know, light years different. I mean, it was the same. I think by that time, we actually had a handle on recording better, and we may have had some better tips on how to do things from the engineer that we had and from Bud, our producer, and then after that from Terry Choate. So, you know, I think a lot more thought was put into it because you could.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had the time and you had the auspices to do it within.
So you had all this budget, a much bigger budget, and yet nobody thought to put some money into someone that would type your names on the album.
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Their name. Here, I'll get it.
Go get it. Right, yeah. Here. That's just a great story.
That's
to
the
tell,
biggest
you know,
CD so. I've ever seen in my life.
Well, that's I know. An
album,
oh,
that's an album, okay.
But look, their name is their names are not on it anywhere.
Well,
the band name is
Mason, and there's Dixon,
and there's some other guy.
Some other guy.
The
wow.
Dash.
Okay.
The
well, Dash. But they put Mac McAnally's name on there. So
I know. So yeah. If you go to eBay,
right,
and you type in Mason Dixon, it'll featuring Mac McAnally,
and nowhere does your name appear.
Nowhere does my name appear on the thing. But
well,
Mac
they didn't
McAnally,
have enough. I think they ran out of budget for the ink. You know
what, Mac McAnally probably did some ooze on one song, but he's on eBay featuring Mac McAnally. Wow. I hope they sold it because, you know, because they're not going to know my name. See, that's why I go by Frank Martin Gilligan now. I was so traumatized that
right.
I didn't get my name.
You're going to make sure that they get all the names.
They want the
yeah,
whole
really.
Thing,
just
know.
Make it harder. Add more names. Yeah,
that's
there
right.
you go.
Yeah.
So what about how much control did you guys have over song choices and stuff with the major label? How were writers pitching to you back then?
You know, I can't say. I remember, as far as writers pitching to us personally, I remember Alex Harvey delivering us a tape, and we were playing at the Bluebird,
mm-hmm.
and he came and gave me a tape, and then we had to get on the bus and go out west, and I woke up in New Mexico, stuck the cassette tape in, and it was a song about New Mexico.
Really?
It was the craziest thing I've ever I can't remember, you know, we went around to the publishing houses, had made appointments, and we said, here's what we're looking for. We need very, you know, big harmony things. And you guys know how it goes. They sit you down and they play 25 seconds of something, and it's either going to hit you or it's not. You know, what I'm saying here is probably very important to the songwriters listening. I don't think the process is much different today when you're pitching songs to artists. You know, it's got to grab you in the first 20, 25 seconds.
Right.
Or
right.
else they move along.
Did you ever record that Alex Harvey song?
Did not.
Okay. Alex Harvey, in case anybody's wondering, that's the guy who wrote Delta Dawn.
Yep.
For Tanya Tucker. And
Reuben James.
Yeah.
He's been here.
Yeah, he was on here a few years ago, actually. Yeah. You can find his podcast at themusicroadshow.com.
Mm-hmm.
But big-time songwriter, you know, and song about New Mexico. That's pretty awesome. So what if you were to go back, you know, what do you wish you knew then that you know now about the music business and about, you know, the stuff that you went through with labels and everything?
Well, I can tell you this. Anything that I might have known then,
yeah,
I don't think it would serve me now.
Okay.
Because it's changed so much.
Well, the music is changing. I've changed a little, too.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What?
Have you noticed? I have a couple of white hairs in my beard.
One or two.
Did you notice that?
One or two.
No.
Yeah, so I'm from a different perspective generationally.
Yeah.
But anything that I knew back then, I think it's out the window now.
Yeah. But is there anything that you know now that you wish you knew back then? Like, oh, I should have done this, or I wish I would have done this way or that way.
Well, no, that's, you know, hindsight's 20/20. You know, I can tell you this. We had a good little run for what we did. We got very lucky with the amount of success that we had. And, you know, on the other hand, there's a lot of people out there saying, Mason Dixon, I don't remember them. And then I sure don't know who Frank Martin Gilligan is. That doesn't matter, really, because there are people out there that remember, and that does my heart good.
All right.
And, you know, that's my lesson.
No, right.
It's a great business to be in when you can touch people with your songs and come on, guys, it's ridiculous. You get to pick up your guitar and sing for people, and sometimes they give you money
or at least dinner.
Yeah.
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 Some
That's
ribs.
Great.
I'll take it.
Love mm-hmm. that.
Let's take a break.
Let's do that.
We're listening to the Music Row Show. This segment brought to you by the fine folks at Yes Master.
Yes Master. They master music for albums, and they do such a great job.
They really do.
They do stuff for people like Scott and me and folks that we know, so that your average songwriter, and they do stuff all the way up to Grammy Award winning projects that, you know, line their walls. When you walk in there, you're like, wow, they mastered that.
Yeah, so
it's
many
amazing.
Of our guests, after we've
gone to commercial said, oh, yeah, I've used them on the last several projects.
Yeah, yeah. They're just excellent at what they do.
Mm, very much.
They make your music sound so much better than you already think it sounds. It's hard to describe until you hear it.
And it's like, affordable.
And it's affordable. So yesmaster.com is the website. Go check them out, yesmaster.com. We're going to be back with a whole lot more Frank Barton Gilligan here on The Music Row Show.
If I gave you the moon, would you keep loving me? If I wrote you a song to make you cry, could I keep you from saying goodbye? If I caught the brass ring.
All right, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're here with Frank Martin Gilligan, and that's a tune off of his latest project called Could I Keep You?
It's such a good song.
I like how you sounded all kind of nasally at the beginning there. How'd you do that?
You know, it was some kind of studio trick.
Seriously, that is a great song.
It belonged in Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah.
But, the song originally was written in a major key.
Right.
Okay.
And we turned it on its ear and turned it into a minor key. And
minorized
the hit factor went up to 11.
That's a neat songwriting story, but talk about that. So can you actually play a little bit of it way you originally wrote it?
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. If I walked through a fire and I swam across the sea, if I gave you the moon, would you keep loving me? If I wrote you a song to make you cry, could I keep you from saying goodbye?
And then it went from there to...
to what you just heard.
Wow, that's cool.
You know, it was just a little ditty before we turned it in a minor key.
That is cool. I'm going to have to just try that because that's never occurred to me. So
if you have some songs that you like but don't love, and it's like, well, maybe you need to just...
There's a guy who takes the Beatles songs and turns them a minor key.
Really?
I think you can see it on YouTube. Beatles in a minor key, just and it's fascinating. I don't know how he does it, but it's great.
And all of a sudden, all these I Want to Hold Your Hands become really sad.
Yeah, more like Let It Be and things like that. Those are the ones that I heard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Wow. Well, you're strapped up with the guitar.
I know,
what are you going to play?
Well, I got to say hello to my sister in Leesburg, Virginia. I know she's listening. And we all have somebody in our lives that gives us song suggestions. Am I correct?
Yes.
Whether we want them or not.
That is true.
And my sister is chief among them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the last one that she suggested was she saw a story on Facebook about this woman in England who took her neighbor's cats and put them in the dumpster. And she said, write a song about that. I said, what?
No, really, it'll be a great song.
Logan's working on it right now, actually.
So I told her that I wrote a song about a guy who strangled his sister. And the requests have stopped.
Wow.
But this song, it's there are people in our lives that maybe they're gone from our lives for one reason or another. They're either no longer alive or no longer in our lives, and they deserve songs, and somehow or another we never got around to it. And that's what this song is about. It's called I Finally Found Your Song. It's a short little tune. I finally found your song. It was hidden in some rhymes I thought were gone for good. I'd really love to sing it to you if I could. But you're not here to listen anymore. I finally found the tears that I couldn't cry the moment that you slipped away. Even though I knew we'd never see another day, and I'd never see you coming through that door, I finally found the words. I haven't found a single one that doesn't hurt. And if you ever hurt, the time can take the pain away. It isn't true. No, it doesn't work. I finally found my voice. And I want the world to hear the things I have to say. I want somehow for you to tell me it's okay. And you forgive me that it had to take so long. I finally found your song. Oh, oh.
Wow. Nice. I love that one.
Love that a lot.
Thank you, gentlemen.
You know, I just noticed that you're playing a 12-string guitar with 6 strings on it.
Yeah, what about it?
I just figured that out.
What's it to you, pal?
I've never seen that, but that's kind of cool. You just couldn't afford the other 6 strings, or what's the deal there?
Well, that's part of it, you know.
Okay.
The guitar was a gift. Uh-huh. Rick Henderson, who I founded Mason-Dixon with, passed away 7 years ago, and his widow, Diana, gave me that guitar that had been sitting in a closet for 7 years.
Hmm.
And I confess that there's no way, the way my fingers are, that's a long story, but I can't play a 12 string.
Okay.
And so I said, let me try it with 6, and I love it.
There you go.
I didn't have to modify anything. It just feels right to me, the way my hands are, you know, rather big.
Yep.
So it's a nice wide.
So not only are you the founder of Blue Wop, but you're also going to probably now start a whole trend of people playing 12-string guitars with 6 strings.
What do you play? I play the 6-string 12-string.
Yeah, I play it Gilligan style. That's
Let's
what
not
I
forget.
Play.
My hands are big. They're huge.
They're huge.
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 All
huge. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but we're going to be back with more of Frank Martin Gilligan here on the Music Row Show. So come on back in just a few. Yeah, welcome back to the Music Row Show. Man, that's a good song. That's Things Don't Ever Stay the Same. That's Frank Martin Gilligan, joined by his guest Sarah Golden on that. You guys sound great together.
Thank you. Sarah's a great singer. She's out of Houston. She was on
Houston. That was the New York Houston. Coming out.
Houston. She was on The Voice, season 3, Team CeeLo. Just great, strong singer.
Mm, great.
I asked her to just kind of riff, and she did.
Sweet.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
Well, what made you we talked about this. You mentioned it earlier in the show that you kind of got back going in with songwriting competitions. What made you start doing that and entering those? And
well, some friends in Houston really got me started. I was kind of easing back into it. Now, 93, Mason-Dixon broke up. And so 2013, 20 years later, I decided to enter one of these songwriting competitions, and a bunch of young kids. You know, this was a songwriter serenade in Moravia, Texas. I recommend it highly to everybody. It's really catching on. It's going to be the 10th year, I think, coming up this year. I won it with a couple of songs. Silver Dollar was one of them. And that really got me back you know, starting to get out there and gig again, you know, with Joe Gavito's help. You know, he got me in the studio. And the next year, it was the Kerrville Folk Festival.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure a lot of people have heard about. It's a biggie. And went to that, and I met Steve Seskin, who was one of the judges.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
And he loved one of my songs. And so the very next year, we got to go back, all the Kerrville winners, and we got to open for David Crosby.
Nice.
And then 2015, I was in the Wildflower Music and Arts Festival songwriting competition, and that kind of rounded out the trifecta.
Wow.
And I'd recommend it to everybody. You know, there was a big thread that we had on Facebook about our songwriting competitions. Is it bogus or what? I recommend that you enter in order to join a community of songwriters, you know, whether or not you place or it, that's not the important thing. You get to meet a bunch of folks that are like-minded and, you know, they love to write songs or love to play music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Well, you and I had talked about this off the air, but back when Mason Dixon was rolling, you guys weren't really writing.
Not at all, really.
So when you did start writing, were you nervous about presenting them out?
Absolutely.
So what got you over that hump?
My huge ego.
Okay.
Ha.
You know, because I'll tell you, and I told you guys, primarily I think of myself as a singer.
Okay.
So even if I didn't have total confidence in the song, which I must admit, I came up with a couple of pretty good ones.
Absolutely.
I have the confidence in the execution, and so that gets me over the hump.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, what's your advice for people interested in getting involved in the festival circuit and playing all that? How do you go about getting into that world, and any tips you might have for that?
Sure, it's like the lottery. You have to buy a ticket.
I see.
You know, these songwriting competitions, you'll have to spend a few bucks, okay. $35 or so to enter your songs. And
but is that separate from the festival circuit? Or
well, it's part of, you know, like Kerrville, for instance. A Songwriter Serenade, by the way, there's no entry fee.
Okay.
So mark that down, okay? Kerrville, you submit, I think, maybe three songs, and it's like maybe $35 for the whole process.
Okay.
And that's just to have, you know, I don't know, handling or whatever.
Sure.
And you have to be a joiner in order to get involved in it. And and subsequently, I get to play the Kerrville festivals. I just played the Kerrville Fall Festival, and you're sitting in front of 400 listeners.
Nice.
And nobody has their phone out, okay, except maybe to take your picture. And it's just a wonderful experience. I mean, you're talking dyed-in-the-wool music lovers.
Mm.
And, you know, multiply that by every festival that you ever go to.
Yeah.
And it's a big reason why you should.
Wow.
So are you saying then that most festivals are connected with a songwriting competition or...
Well, the ones that I mentioned are.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
The first one, Songwriter Serenade, is a songwriting competition, plain and simple. Kerrville has, the songwriting competition for Kerrville is called New Folk. I suggest people Google Kerrville New Folk and see who's participated in it before. It'll be quite eye-opening. You know, you've got your Lyle Lovitz and Nancy Griffith and Steve Earle and, you know, people like that. And then Wildflower is a festival that also has a competition. And I think Rocky Mountain Folk Festival has a songwriting competition. And I'm going to leave it at that because that's all I know.
Okay.
But it sounds like if you do well in the competition, then you get invited just to be a performer in the
you
festival.
You become a member
there.
Of the family. Like Kerrville, I'm an official Kervert.
Yeah.
A Kervert.
Interesting.
If you've been to Kerrville and you love Kerrville, you're an official Kervert. And every time you come back, they say, welcome home.
Nice.
It's lovely.
Nice.
It really is.
That is nice. So, and I don't know if we've talked, we have, about how to get this album again. The name of the album is Silver Dollar, Frank Martin Gilligan. I really highly encourage you to go find this online and get yourself a copy of it. With the Mason Dixon songs, one of the things that I was struck by with the songs is just how solid they were. And also because of the era you recorded them in, there's that 80s keyboard and there's that really dated sound to it. But the songs themselves are not dated. Has there been thought of re-recording with new instrumentation and or just a real acoustic version of it?
No, none whatsoever. I'm kidding.
Okay, good talk. Anyway, thanks.
Okay, check please.
We have in the works. I'm wanting to do when Karen comes around again, and we're just gonna see how it works. It's a hard song to sing.
Yeah.
So anybody else out there want to try it? You go ahead. we'll see how it goes. We're going in when I get home next week. We're gonna start batting it around.
Nice. All right. Yeah. All right. Very nice.
Well, how do you use today's technology to kind of keep in touch with your friends and grow your fan base and stuff?
Well, Facebook for me is probably the number one, and I'm you know, I have Instagram, Twitter, but I don't spend a whole lot of time on that, and that's just that's my fault.
Yeah.
Facebook is the main. I have a music page and I have a personal page, and they're kind of intertwined, but that's how you can find me.
It's hard though, you know, when you're looking at Instagram, Snapchat, Twitter, there's only so much time in the day.
I know. And you know, then you have to book yourself.
Right.
I'm betting on the fact that people of my age, I'm a baby boomer. They're sticking with Facebook, and I don't think Twitter is going to, you know.
As far as your listening base, your core audience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's smart.
Interesting. That's smart. Thank you so much for joining
us.
Guys.
Thank you.
The website, once again, is frankmartingilligan.com.
Correct.
And I'm sure your Facebook name is also just Frank Martin Gilligan.
That's right.
Easy to find. There you go. And go get his new album. It's called Silver Dollar. You can find it at his website and Amazon and iTunes and all those great places.
You'll love it.
It's really, really awesome. And we thank you for joining us. Go check out themusicroadshow.com and send us a message. We'd love to hear from you. Until we meet again, go write something. Strong!